Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And as we're heading into this new year, we are looking at what might happen. And one of the better ways to know what might happen is what has happened. And in that regard, there are cycles in the world, in the universe. There are cycles to look at that show us what cycles we're in. And if we're in those cycles, then that tells us what the future can be like as well. So to do this, I've asked a couple of cycles experts to be on the show. One of them is the head of the Cycles Research Institute, and that's Ray Tomes. Ray?
Hi, Peter.
Hi, welcome. And we also have David Katzmeier, who's been on the show before. David runs an organization called Calorhythms, and he's into these cycles and rhythms that we need to know about. David, welcome.
Hello, Peter.
So I'm so glad that both of you are on the show. I thought we were going to have a third guest, but he hasn't called in, so I don't know what's going on with that. So the three of us are going to talk about this amazing science of using the past to actually predict the future and understand the past also. And it's fascinating. Ray, I've looked at your website. There's a lot of information on there, very scientific. What can you tell us about what comfort zone we should be in or not right now?
Okay, well, it probably depends on what your interests are, because with cycles, we can look at very different time horizons. And David mentioned you're looking sort of a year out, but really, in a year, the biggest cycles you get are the seasons. You know, they come and go, and it gets hot and cold and that sort of thing. But I think you have to put things in perspective. You have to look at longer cycles to actually see where you're going in the longer term, and then the events that are happening in a year make sense within that. So that, like, historically, cycles have been studied from everything from, quadrillions of cycles per second for atomic stuff through to of the order of a billion years and with geological cycles. So we look at everything in between, but the ones that are most interesting perhaps to us as humans are the ones that take a few years, because we see those unfolding.
Yes, and also it depends on your relativity, your point of view, because right now we're in a cold cycle, but you're not. What's the difference?
I know, that's right. Yeah, we're right in the middle of it. We're in summer now.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. But it's understandable since you're calling from New Zealand.
Yes. Well, for a moment there when you said we're in a cold cycle, I thought you were talking about we're having a bit of a pause in global warming.
Oh, well, that would be interesting. But actually, a cold cycle is part of global warming. Might be the end result of global warming.
Sure.
We might go into an ice age.
Yes, well, we'll move sometime. It's just a question of when.
That's true, because there are cycles that move us in and out of ice ages. Hopefully not too soon.
Yeah.
But we don't know.
Could I mention a little bit of background of the stuff to do with cycles, how I got interested? Because I wasn't actually looking at cycles. I was looking at trying to do forecasts for businesses so they could plan their business. And I accidentally discovered a bunch of cycles. Well, I thought I'd discovered them. It turned out I'd rediscovered them. And I noticed that the periods of the cycles I found, one was 4.45 years and different other ones longer than that. And I noticed that if I multiplied each of those periods by a different number, 4, 5, 6, and 8, they all came to the same thing, about 35.6 years. And I thought, that's a bit mysterious. And then I realized 4, 5, 6, 8 was a major chord in music, and that there was a whole lot of other cycles that had musical relationships in them. At that stage, I didn't mention it to people because I thought they'd think I was mad. But when I then found there was a place called the Foundation for the Study of Cycles, I found that all the same stuff had been previously discovered by a fellow by the name of Edward Dewey, and that he'd got started on this around the time of the Great Crash. He was appointed to do that work, and then he had come across cycles as a way to explain that. He found it was the only thing that actually gave some forewarning. Well, it wasn't forewarning because it was after the event, but it would have if people had used it, given a forewarning of that. And so he made a huge study, and he had a little table. When I got to the foundation with a study of cycles, I found a table of cycles periods, and he was using different data from a different time period from different countries, and he had found the same pattern of exactly the same cycles that I'd found, except he'd beaten me to it. But it was a confirmation that these things are pervading the whole Earth. And a fellow by the name of Chozevsky was doing similar work in Russia, and he gives a beautiful poetic description of how everything that happens to humans is the result of the pulsations of the whole cosmos arriving at this point, and we're just on a little dance of being tossed around by that, you know, which I think your leading in description gave us a good idea of that as well.
Right.
And
go ahead.
A couple of the things that Dewey mentioned that were particularly interesting were that there was this thing called cycle synchrony. They found that often a lot of different things had the same cycle period, and they had the same phase. They hit their peaks at the same time. That was one thing. And another one was the cycle harmonics, that they had proportions. Some cycles were exactly twice as long as others were exactly three times as long, and various combinations of those. There'd be some that were six times or 12 times or four times or eight times as well.
It's fascinating.
And so that background there, I can confirm that all those things are accurate because I independently discovered them using different data, and they are very pervasive things. They have been discovered by other people. So I think it's good to have that in the back of your mind in the other things that we talk about, that all this is going on. So, for example, one of the things I like to follow for investment purposes is the currency. Now, the New Zealand dollar moves quite a lot relative to the US dollar. We move from being worth about 40 cents US up to about 80 cents, sometimes not so extreme, but it always moves from 40 or 50 up to 70 to 80 cents over 4 years, and then it moves back over the next four. So over an eight-year cycle, there's opportunity to make a lot of money in this investment point of view. And so that cycle, for example, should reach its turning point of the eight-year cycle in about a year. So in other words, in that time, the New Zealand currency will get stronger and the US currency weaker. And there's other currencies that move as well in relationship to those. And we can see actually evidence for 16-year, 8-year, 4-year and 2-year cycles all happening. So it's a bit of a choppy ride at times. But I think one of the things we're looking for the next year is for the US dollar to bottom out in about a year's time.
That's fascinating because most people wouldn't think it has to do with cycles, that it has to do more with world events.
Yeah. Well, world events, of course, are driven by cycles rather than the other way around.
Right. Of course. I should have thought of that. But what's interesting is what drives the cycles.
Yeah.
And I've...
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, as Chozevsky described it, and Dewey very reluctantly came to describing it as cosmic, he described it as there are forces, and he made a statement that any field you study, whether it be medicine or climate or physics or anything, that you do without understanding that there are these pattern of cycles, he said it's like doing medicine before the discovery of germs. You can't possibly do a very good job because germs are so important in medicine, and cycles are so important in every scientific field, and in most fields they are not aware of the cycles that are going on in that area, so they are always working in the dark.
Well, I would think that we're talking about the difference between a war and a battle, because you're looking at the cycles of wars, but within each war there are many different kinds of skirmishes that could have win or lose attached to them.
Yeah, well, Chozevsky in Russia and Wheeler in the U.S. studied cycles of, well, they actually did, they call it a war index, but it's actually based on battle. So they actually included all those. And they found back in the 50s, they found there was an 11-year cycle and a 22-year cycle and some other longer and shorter ones in war. But those two particularly note because they are the same as the sunspot cycle. And every time the sunspot maximum occurs, around the period a year either side of that, there are a lot more wars. Now, since they discovered that, the major events that have happened in the wars have continued to follow that cycle.
Fascinating. I was looking at that on your website about the history of the last 300 years of, or 200 years of war, 300 years of wars, and the major wars that took over each one took over 100,000 lives, and I think there were 60 to, or 70 of them, and that they all took place. 93% of the lives lost had to do with the movements of Saturn and Jupiter. No, Jupiter, Neptune, and I guess Saturn too, right?
Well, some of the periods probably do correspond to those. There's a 142-year cycle, although that's not one of those planetary periods, and there's a 53-year cycle. So I don't think those ones are connected too much. Maybe this is something to do with maybe that was David that you were talking about. They were looking on his website that happened.
No. That was there
was
on
the cycles research.
Yeah, it was, and there was a paper on there, and I printed it out, and it had to do with the major wars. And they all had to do with whether, I think particularly Jupiter was ascending or descending.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And when it was...
That's the thing is, well, Jupiter, the sunspot cycle, originally that people thought Jupiter was the cause of the sunspot cycle because it's just the next biggest body to the sun in the solar system. But the thing is, the sunspot cycle is about 11.1 years, whereas Jupiter's period around the sun is 11.8 years, and eventually they get out of sync. And eventually they come back into sync. But it turns out that the 11.1-year cycle does do a little, it's like, you know how when people are marching and they do a little quick one to get back in step at times? It does that sort of a thing. So it's actually marching to a different rhythm, but it's slightly following the Jupiter one as well. So that probably is true also, yes.
Yeah, it was fascinating to see that these cycles, what you're doing is you're taking localized cycles and you're looking at more solar system cycles,
and
these numbers all seem to line up in one way or another.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why the sun has this effect on wars. We can actually follow the whole pattern because we know now that there's all this space weather. Well, we knew already that there's a lot of stuff, a lot of charged particles get thrown out of the sun that vary on the solar cycle. And that when these hit the Earth, you get more aurora when you're at sunspot maximum. Now, all that is charged particles hitting the Earth, set the aurora off, but they also set the electromagnetic field of the Earth vibrating. And the natural frequency of that is 8 cycles per second, called the Schumann resonance. And so the whole Earth's electromagnetic field is vibrating at that. And when a big heap of charged particles come in, it really gets the Earth ringing. You know, it's like hitting a gong or something. And that frequency is right in the middle of human brainwave frequencies. So when that means our brains are getting hyped up. When the sun is at its maximum, our brains are getting hyped up. So if people have got repressed frustrations with their neighbouring countries and so on, this is the time that causes it all to rise up and everyone goes to town on it. And then eventually when the sun quietens down again, they all think, oh, okay, we can stop for a while now.
It would be great if this science was being used more politically and by governments to manage themselves and to understand why they're doing what they're doing.
Yes, because in fact, when they try to control the money supply and so on, they actually often do the exact opposite to what's the right thing, because they don't realize when the things they do that try to pump the economy up a bit when it's slow or slow it down when it's fast, they're actually doing them at the wrong point in the cycle, because the things that they do are like an acceleration, not a velocity. To describe that, let's say a person's on a swing, swinging backs and forwards. What they're doing is when the person's at one extreme, they're pushing it back towards the middle. And when it's at the other extreme, they're pushing it back towards the middle. And that's how you make a swing go faster, not how you stop it.
That's
what they actually do.
Yeah. And so they need a cycles expert on as a maybe a cabinet position in each government.
Yeah, well, they need to understand that. They do understand that there is a cycle in that, but they're actually... applying the forces at the wrong time. The time that if, is to cause the economy to be more steady, if that's your objective, is just when it's starting to pick up, you apply forces to try and slow it down because it's already got enough momentum to take it past the middle and beyond. So with a swing, when it's coming towards the middle, if you push it away from the middle, that's the time to cause it to gradually reduce the swinging. And it's the opposite to what people's natural reaction is. People's natural reaction keeps the cycle going.
Yeah, their natural reaction is because they're in the cycle.
Yes. Yeah. And it is the reactions, it's the people's reactions that keep the cycle going because, they're a part of it.
Right.
People are a part of it.
Exactly. Now, let's talk about this year. As you said, it's more than a one-year cycle usually that we're in. And so what are the cycles that you can point to for this that include this year that we're in the middle of?
Yeah. Well, I would say now the stock market, I would say, is one of the hardest things to predict because there's so many people trying to do it that it's already discounted a lot of the stuff. But I do think that the stock market and the sort of recession side, that we are having the second dip and that will finish about the end of next year, so about a year away from now. And that will correspond to the U.S. currency being at a low. Now, those things don't always all go together, but on this occasion, I think they'll all hit a low about that same time. But some things beyond that. So commodities, particularly oil, is the big one, but other commodities tend to move on the same cycle. There's two very strong cycles on that. One's about 30 years, which will be Saturn one, if you're interested in that, and a 5.5-year, which is half the sunspot cycle. And if you go back, for example, with oil, in the 1910s, the 1940s, the 1970s, and the 2000s, there were huge surges in the price of oil. But if you think about those years, they are the years that the U.S. has been involved in very expensive wars as well, First World War, Second World War, Vietnam, etc., and the Middle East ones. And so all of those have caused huge surges in oil and commodity prices, which really means debasement of the American currency. But this, the 5.5-year cycle, now I did a prediction in early 2008 when the, or it might have been 2007, when the price of oil had just started to take off the previous time, I did this analysis and I found there was a 5.5-year cycle and it indicated a peak in 2008. And at that stage, the price was still quite low. And I was predicting there would be a big peak in 2008, drop back again, and a second peak towards the end of 2013. And I said at that stage, because of the 30-year cycle, we could be looking at as much as $300 per barrel for oil at that stage. Now, at that stage, people thought that was a crazy prediction. But when we got to $170 on the first peak, it began to look more like a possibility. So that one, I think we will see that beginning to happen in this year, but it will be the following year, beginning to happen in 2012. But 2013 will be where the oil and commodity prices really go crazy again.
And that might have also to do with the dollar bottoming out.
Yeah, well, I think the dollar will bottom sooner. I think that it will bottom at the end of next year, around that time.
Right, but if the dollar is that low, it would be understandable why the price of oil would be that high.
Sure, yep.
So oil and the dollar. What other kinds of cycles should we be looking at?
Okay, well, the property one is an interesting one because you had, the price of housing. I found two interesting websites that talked about housing prices, both written by university professors. One of them, everything he said was a lie, as far, in my opinion, or he was very foolish. And the other one, everything he said was the really best way to analyze it. And it's very interesting when you see these different things. And that one, what he'd done, he'd taken property prices over more than a century and divided them by the consumer price index. So you're just getting rid of the inflation component so you could see what's really happening with property prices relative to other stuff. And that showed that over for 100 years, it never went out. He set it to 100 and at the beginning, and it never went more than 15 either side of that for 100 years. And it was doing an 11-year cycle, which is, again, the sunspot cycle. And then in early 2000, it went up to 200. So it had never been above 115 before, It went up to 200. So that means housing prices in the early 2000s. And the other professor was saying that everything that's known about the market has already been discounted, so you can't make predictions and make a safety net. Someone asked him a question about making safety nets. Now, the answer to the question really is the prices at that stage were 100% too high. That was the correct answer. And the other guy could demonstrate that very clearly. And so at that stage, if you applied the 11-year cycle that was clear up to that time, it predicted there would be a huge crash into 2008, which is exactly what happened.
Right. It had to be huge because it was already 100% over the curve.
So it had to come down a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So correct.
And with that one again, it's... at that stage, they were lending 105% and 110% mortgages on a price that was 100% too high. So they were lending 210% to 220% of the actual value of the house.
There's,
the long-term
there's
value.
So much you can read into that.
Yeah.
It's amazing how important it is to understand the science of cycles, especially this
way. I don't believe some people knew. I don't believe that some of them didn't know what was going on.
Right, because they were betting against themselves.
Yeah. They had to be, I mean, put it this way, they either knew what was going on and were doing something devious, or they were totally incompetent and shouldn't be in the job. You know, you can't have it. They're either devious or incompetent. You couldn't have it any other way.
It's fascinating. I don't know how to judge that other than to assume that they were devious.
Yeah. I think there's enough evidence for that.
So, there are so many things that our imagination can take us to examine cycles of.
Yes.
And we do have David on the phone. David, are you still with us?
Yeah, give him a 10.
And listening to every word.
And you study cycles with calorhythms, and that has to do with also emotional cycles and mental cycles.
It does. It's another way of looking at the same world through perhaps a different lens that's intricately connected to many other lenses as well. The cycles that I look at, calorhythms, K-A-L-A, rhythms, basically find that there are physical cycles, emotional cycles, and intellectual cycles that move through our lives on many different levels. We have found that they move then our own bodies from the time of birth, and we've given that a name, biorhythms. And these go highs and lows of so many days, each for a physical cycle, an emotional cycle, and an intellectual cycle. But what's interesting is as we are the building blocks of the civilizations we create in our own image, which only makes sense when you consider how we were created. And as we do that, we mirror ourselves in the communities we build, the countries that we construct, and in the tides of world civilization and change. But what happens as you go up to the level of a nation, you find that the cycles are slower moving because larger institutions are slower to change. Yet the pattern is the same in a country as it is in a person.
And you have mapped that.
I have mapped that in that it's the key is finding the durations to these cycles. And we find that there's a physical cycle, as it were, in the nation, and an emotional cycle, and an intellectual cycle. Well, what are you looking at? You can take from the time of birth of a nation or a point of evolution where it turns over and basically becomes a new identity. From that time, a clockwork begins where you have physical, emotional, intellectual highs and lows. And in society, what is physical is basically your output in durable goods. It is what is physical is the strength of your armed forces, maybe your industrial power, and so forth. These are physical highs and lows and how people behave. Are they doing, jazz, energetic dancing and disco, or are they getting overweight? Because the people in the society are moving up and down with varying levels of physical energy. And the same thing happens with matters of the heart. You have highs and lows in emotional energy, as we've seen in the United States going back to the 1890s, a rather exuberant time coming out of the Elizabethan Victorian era. And we would call that the gay 90s, Then there was reforms of the turn of the century, more subdued. Then we peaked up in the roaring 20s. Then we went down in the Great Depression. But we came back in the fabulous 50s and the 60s. Then
what I want to ask, David, is where are we now?
where we are now.
What does it mean?
Now,
we only have a few minutes left of the show.
Okay, as Ray said, understand where we are right now is to look in the context of major world change. I agree with the forecast that Ray had, is that we could have a bit of recession lasting through the next year and the bottoming out of the dollar next year. This is as a result of world change. Just to factor out one more level, the centuries are moving and the beyond which all the nations are under the umbrella of world change. And as we look at the Occupy movements in cities around the world, the economic fall of Greece, the turnover of the government of Iceland a few years ago, the tens of thousands of people protesting in Russia in the last week, and on, isn't that interesting? All these things are happening at the same time. What I want people to focus on is that this is the result of world change that's happening every so many centuries. We go into this critical period, but it's not castles crumbling. The important message I have is that the change, which will last for another year, is the result of the birth pangs of a new era. As we rise up into a new era of romanticism and a new age of reason, keep your eyes on the horizon. Don't let the temporal maladies set your long-term waypoints. And remember that we're going to come out of this in a year and hitch your wagon to a star that's rising. Don't be materialistic. Be idealistic and be reasonable.
This has been such a great opportunity to talk to both of you about what we're living in and how to hold it and to understand that we can trust the cycles. We don't know what else we can trust, but we can trust the cycles. So thank you. Ray, how do people find you?
Through cyclesresearchinstitute.org, they can find, if they send an email to that site, that will get to me. Or I have my personal website, ray.tomes.biz.
That's great, and I really appreciate you talking about it. This is something, obviously, we could do a 10-hour show about.
There's so much. Yeah, I'm sorry I hogged too much of your time, David.
I wanted... David's been on the show before. He'll be on plenty of times, and hopefully you'll be back, too, Ray.
Yeah.
And David, you can be reached where?
I can be reached at Kalarhythms, kalarhythms.org.
And David, you know, it's fascinating. You're local. Where do you live?
I live in Pennsylvania near Philadelphia.
Okay, so people can even call you.
And they certainly can.
It might be harder to reach Ray, although Ray, I know, works on Skype.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful, too. And Tomes is T-O-M-E-S.
That's right, yeah.
And you guys are fantastic, and keep up the work. This is so important to hold this science in its power and help more and more people know about it so that we can manage these cycles better.
Yes, yeah. Well said, Peter.
Thank you. And so I want to wish you guys a good year, even though whatever cycle we're in. But let's make the most of it, okay? David, you too.
Yeah.
Ray and David, thank you so much for being on Energy Stew.
Absolutely. Thanks,
Peter. Sure. Thank you, Ray. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at progressiveradionetwork.com. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, 212-222-7748. Heartriver.org is my website. Please visit. And thank you so much for listening.